Chapter 7. A Conversation on the Terrace. It was not until late the next day that I spoke to Mrs. Gross. Because it was necessary for me always to watch my pupils, it was difficult to meet her privately. But during the day, the thought of Mrs. Gross made me feel safe and calm. I was sure she believed me when I told her about the ghosts. If she had not believed me, I do not know what I would have done. It was good that she was someone who had no imagination. She often looked at the two happy, friendly children with her big, calm face, as if she thought that they would always be fine. If she had been as anxious as I was, it would have been far more worrying for me. It was late afternoon when Mrs. Gross joined me, when I asked her to do so on the terrace. She had not wanted to, because she said she had work to do. The summer was ending, and the afternoon sun on the terrace was warm and gentle. As we sat there, we could watch the children walking on the lawn. They were far enough away not to be able to hear us, but close enough if I wanted to call them. They were moving slowly side by side, while Miles read a story to his sister, holding her close to him. They were behaving wonderfully well. Mrs. Gross listened as I told her about the previous night. I told her how I had gone down into the garden immediately after I saw Miles. As soon as I appeared in the moonlight on the terrace, he came to me, and I took his hand without a word. We did not speak as we went through the dark hall, up the stairs, where I had found Quint looking for him, and back to his room. How strange that silence was. Was he wondering in his dreadful little mind what to say to me? I had caught him looking up at his friend, Quint, but he was clever. He knew I could not admit to him how much I knew, and I knew that it was useless to try and explain this to Mrs. Gross. I did tell her what I said to him when we were back in the bedroom. "You must tell me now, and tell me the whole truth," I said to Miles. "What did you go out for? What were you doing there?"
"If I tell you why, will you understand?" he replied.
My heart jumped into my mouth when I heard this. Would he tell me why? I stared at him very seriously, and he smiled at me charmingly.
"Well," he said, "I wanted you to think that I could be bad."
Then he bent towards me and kissed me. I held him in my arms for a minute, trying not to cry.
"Then you didn't go to bed at all?" "No, I didn't. I sat in my bed and read a book."
"And when did you go downstairs?" I asked.
"At midnight. When I'm bad, I am bad."
"I see," I said. "But how were you going to make sure I found out?" His answers came quickly.
"Oh, I arranged that with Flora. She was going to get up and look out of the window."
"Yes, she did that," I replied.
"So she made you wake up and want to find out what she was looking at," he said. "And you looked, you found out. I was very bad, wasn't I?"
After another hug, I had to end the interview. He was too clever for me. There was nothing more I could say. Then, as I was leaving the room, he said,
"Think what I might do."
When I repeated this last sentence to Mrs. Gross, I added,
"He knows what he might do. That's what he showed them at school." "Miss!" cried Mrs. Gross, shocked. "Miles and Flora are not really good," I went on. "If you had been with either child during these last nights, you would have understood what I understand. They meet them all the time. Look at the children now. He's not reading to her. They are talking about them. If you had seen what I have seen, it would have made you crazy. But it has made me understand more clearly. I know that what I said sounded awful to my friend, but I could see she still liked watching the children walk gently backwards and forwards in front of her. "What other things have you understood?" she asked me. "I've understood that their charm and their good behaviour are not real," I told her. "They are playing a game with us to confuse us."
"But they are little children."
"Yes," I said. I was starting to understand things even more clearly as I said them aloud. My doubts had disappeared. The children were aware of the ghosts. "They haven't been good. It's as if they haven't been here. They have led a life of their own. They're not mine. They're not ours. They're his and they're hers."
"Quince and that woman's?"
"Quince and that woman's. They want to possess them." Poor Mrs. Gross. How hard she stared at the children then. Then she asked,
"But why?"
"Because of all the evil that they did to the children during the terrible days when they were alive," I said. "Wanting to continue their evil is what brings ghosts back."
"Oh dear," said Mrs. Gross.
It was a simple thing to say, and it showed me that she accepted what I had told her.
"They were wicked people," she said at last. "But what can they do now?"
"Do?" I shrieked so loudly that Miles and Flora, as they were passing us, paused and looked at us. "Don't they do enough already?" I said in a quieter voice, while the children smiled and kissed their hands to us. We found ourselves watching them for a few minutes while they continued to walk in front of us. "Those horrors can destroy them." The housekeeper turned and looked at me in confusion, silently asking me to explain. So I continued. "They don't yet know how they are going to destroy the children, but they are trying hard. At the moment, they are not close to the children. The children can see the ghosts above them, at the top of the tower, or far from them, on the other side of the lake. But they bring danger, and the children will try to go to them."
"And die if they try to do that," said Mrs. Gross, slowly getting up.
"Unless we can stop that from happening," I replied. She stood in front of me as I still sat in my chair, and I could see that she was thinking.
"Their uncle must stop that from happening," she said. "He must take them away from Bly."
"And who will make him do that?"
She had been looking out over the park, but now she looked down at me, embarrassed.
"You, miss?"
"By writing to him that his house is full of evil and his little nephew and niece are mad," I said grimly.
"But if they are mad, miss..."
"And if I am mad too, you mean," I said. "That means he'll be getting terrible news from the person who he trusted not to worry him."
Mrs. Gross was watching the children again.
"Yes, he does hate to be worried."
Then she suddenly sat down again and took hold of my arm.
"Make him come to see you."
I stared at her.
"To see me?"
I quickly stood up, embarrassed in case she understood from looking at my face what I felt for him. When I looked at her again, I could see she did not understand that. But instead, I saw that we both knew what my employer was going to think. A young governess had accepted the handsome gentleman's strange conditions when she came to Bly. But now she was trying to attract him by persuading him that she needed help. He would be angry. He might laugh. I had been so proud he had trusted me that I did not want to contact him. But then I was suddenly afraid of what the housekeeper might do.
"If you tried to contact him, Mrs. Gross," I said.
She was really frightened.
"Yes, miss. I will leave Bly immediately."